And our topic today is rhubarb. Rhubarb is not the same as rhubarb. Welcome to Gardeners Radio by Lubera Edibles, the podcast for professional gardeners. We are talking about edible plants. My name is Frederik Vollert, and at Lubera Edibles, I'm responsible for the product development. And my guest today is again Markus Kobelt, founder of the online shop lubera.com and also co-founder of Lubera Edibles. Markus, where does the rhubarb come from?
Yeah, if you ask a Swiss family member, he or she would say, oh, that's a Swiss plant. North German people would say, oh, that's originally German. And English, of course, would say, yeah, the rhubarb triangle, that's for sure an English plant, a native English plant. But rhubarb came from Asia, from China, Nepal, Tibet, near the Himalaya. And they came first to Europe. They came, you can say, in two times to Europe. First, they came to Europe with Arabs, and especially to Spain. The Arabs imported this Asian plant not for the stems, not for eating, but as a medicine. And for the medicine, they used the roots. It should help by digestive problems, whatever. So newer studies have shown that digestive results are not very, very intense, so it's not really a good drug, a good medicine. But it was asked, and this was forgotten a little bit, and then in the early new time, in the 15th, 16th century, the Russian began again to import rhubarbs from Asia, from China, through Siberia, and the Russian Tsar even did a monopoly on rhubarbs, so they could really change rhubarbs against gold or silver perhaps. And on the other side, the English and the Dutch commerce companies tried to do the same. And in the whole process, more and more rhubarb types, rhubarb varieties, rhubarb species were imported. They mixed, they were sought, they were planted, they came in the botanical gardens, and they changed also. And suddenly around 1800, and parallel in Paris, in Germany, in Hamburg, and in London, people began to sell rhubarb stems as a vegetable or as a special fruit. So it was an interesting time, an interesting coincidence. Why at that time? Perhaps even through another foreign plant, the tea plant, the tea production went up, but also the sugar production, because the English started to drink tea only with a lot of sugar. And so the sugar production worldwide went up and became a commodity. And a commodity also, I think people in the 18th century took a lot of their calories through sugar. And so with this sugar, and with sugar as a commodity, rhubarb became possible. Otherwise, you cannot imagine to eat rhubarb as this, too sour. And so the high time of rhubarb culture in Europe was between the middle of the 19th century and end of the First World War. There are people in England a little bit older than me, which remember times when in school for the meal at noon, every meal was with a dessert of rhubarbs. And there are now people who cannot live without rhubarb, but there are really addicts. And there are also people who will never eat rhubarb again because of this. So that's in England. Even there was a region, the rhubarb triangle, where rhubarb production, rhubarb forcing, so taking out the roots, bring them to warm, dark rooms, and there forcing the stems and selling them these fine stems, was really a main culture in the region in southern mm-hmm. Middle England.
So, and why do you now have chosen to breed on rhubarb? So, I think it's not. How big is the rhubarb breeding in the world at the moment?
So I don't know. I don't even know another rhubarb breeder. I haven't found one yet. One of my heroes in breeding history, Luther Burbank, also bred rhubarbs. He imported, end of the 19th century, rhubarb types from Australia, which were in a warmer climate, which were producing through the summer into the autumn, ever growing, ever bearing rhubarbs. So type of Livingston we have now as a newer variety, and he brought the first ever bearing rhubarb to the market, which was bred off this material from Australia. And I thought when Luther did it, I have to do it too. And so that was producing rhubarbs in our nursery, and having seen the diversity of rhubarbs, especially in England, where I have seen a assortiment, and also in Wisley you see a big assortment mm-hmm. of varieties. So I thought it would be interesting to have them in our test planting. So it begins like almost always, it begins like this. You have a assortment, you have a collection of varieties. You look at them, then sometimes you see the seeds, you cannot resist. You take the seeds, you saw them. And then we had we also started doing crossings, controlled crossings with the help of bumblebees, and so we produced lots of seeds and thousands of plants. And yeah, then you cannot do otherwise; you have to plant and to select. And so this was the start of our rhubarb breeding program.
And what were the results of this of starting your rhubarb breeding program? Do you got any surprises you never thought about before? Or
the diversity is bigger than you think. There are also varieties. There are varieties which are very near, and others which are really distant. You see that. The background, the genetic background, is very diverse. It developed in these years where the Russian importers and also the English brought all types of rhubarbs to European botanic gardens, and they mixed. And so because of this, you have really different types. This is the first thing. The second thing is that we have seen that there will be some inbreeding, because people, normally they are propagating rhubarb vegetatively, but when you don't have enough plants, and if you don't have time, you use seeds, selfed seeds, also for planting. And so you have in all older varieties, you have some inbreeding in it, and when you are crossing these inbreeding lines, you have some a boost in the crop, in the boost in the stems. And we had some crosses which were very, where the outcome was very similar, but very vegetatively very interesting. So lots of stems, big stems, especially green varieties. And this was interesting. We didn't anticipate this. And yes, we even found some new types of rhubarbs we never thought of.
So what are these new types of rhubarbs? Do you have some examples?
The first is the crazy bearing rhubarbs, which 80 stems per plant, so that's possible. The second is more than we thought, more ever-bearing rhubarbs, which are really producing through the summer. No, you can almost select them by selecting the first growing rhubarbs in spring, because the habit that plants are reacting on the first spring temperature. And starting, the earliest rhubarbs are mostly also the rhubarbs which are producing through some, not always, but it's a good idea of it. So autumn rhubarb, summer rhubarbs which are producing through the summer. And the third is really a new type. This is blooming rhubarbs. Normally normally you're taking off the blooms because
this is what every hobby gardener do in his garden.
Because they are taking off energy and the plant isn't able to produce enough new stems. And but we have seen that we have rhubarbs which are producing blooms like crazy. So we will have in the next year another look. That's your duty to test it if you could also cook or use the blooms. But they are very nice in the field. And so we have selected varieties which are making 4 to 10 blooms. And at the same time, they are still able to produce enough stems. So this was the selection criteria. Perhaps the fourth idea are compact growing rhubarbs. There are compact growing rhubarbs which have only a diameter of 40 centimeter and perhaps a height of 40, 50 centimeter. So this type exists and this could be a very interesting type for pot production and also for growing rhubarbs in pots.
And this will be possible, growing rhubarbs in pots for a couple of years?
Yes, yes. With this variety. You see also some customer doing it with these everberry rhubarbs like Livingston and with these new types which are genetically much more compact. It will also be possible. And you have really also stems. They are not 40 centimeters, they are only 15, 20 centimeters, but you can use them for cakes and other things.
Yeah. And how long does it will take to if you will release your first own rhubarb varieties?
On our online shop, blueberry.com, we will have the first plants of the first variety this year. And next year also for other customers. It's like always, when you only have some 100 plants, the only possibility to sell them and to use them is in our own direct-to-consumer business, blueberry.com. But from next year on, they are open for all. But it will be the variety Syrup Barber. And it's a red-red variety, outside red, inside red. We have another variety in our assortment till now, and perhaps we will test these two varieties against each other, the variety Canada Red. And it seems to us that the new variety is a little bit more productive, the stems are a little bit bigger and they are cooking a little bit faster, so that's our impression. It's not a very big difference, so and we will sell this new variety because it's cooking so well and it's such a nice color as a syrup barber. So, you know, you can produce syrup yourself, you can buy syrup saps, drinks everywhere, but normally they have no color. And if you have ever seen a pink-red syrup, rhubarb syrup or a drink, you will never want to have another. So people out there, if you're interested to produce syrups, if you are interested to produce something to drink, rhubarb drinks, use our new variety, Syrup Barber.
Yeah, thanks. And can you explain our listeners and also our viewers what qualities of young plants are now at the market and what quality of young plants Lubera Edible is selling?
Yes, in principle we would we can announce two revolutions in rhubarb production. The first is new varieties coming. So every year in the next 1, 2, 3 years, we will have new varieties. There will be three groups of varieties. These heavy bearing rhubarbs, crazy bears with 30 to 80 stems per plant. And then we will have this ever-bearing varieties and the bloom varieties. So that's the revolution in varieties. But we have also a revolution in production. So we started producing rhubarb young plants perhaps 10 years ago, and it was a small crop and it was difficult to do it. And also some others were able to do it, but in the last 2-3 years we have found the solution. It works now, it works in an industrial level. We are producing hundreds of thousands of rhubarbs now. And selling, and this makes another type of production. Yeah, before you had this problem, you had this field-grown rhizomes 40-50 centimeters in diameter, and then you have to cut them in pieces, and then you have to pot these big pieces into 2-3-5 liter pots, whatever. That's hard work and very difficult. Yes. And you are also every 2-3 years you are losing half of the crop because we are rotting. And with our micropropagated in vitro propagated plants, all of these problems are done. So it's easy to pot, it's easy to produce, you have no losses. And so that's really, it makes the rhubarb culture in pots for garden centers and so on, makes it much, much better. And at the same time also the number of the production, number on the market which is asked for rhubarbs are going up crazy. That's the reason we are now selling hundred thousands of rhubarb plants. Are you producing rhubarb plants? You should, for sure. And it's much easier to do it with little plantlets. Another thing, with these little plantlets, it's also possible to produce a smaller pot. You can produce a pot of half a liter, 1 liter, 2 liter, 3 liters, 5 liters, all with the same young plant. In our opinion, it still makes sense to produce as big as possible plant, because then you have a better price and you have an advantage for your customer. The advantage of a 3-5 liter pot, which is produced in season one and sold in spring of season two, is that customers already in the first year can take 2-3 stems, and in the second year in the field they can have a full production. So this is the advantage of bigger plants. So in our nursery we are producing about 15,000 to 20,000 5-liter rhubarb plants per year. You have to change a little bit your production if you're using these small plantlets, but it's more or less an advantage. You're potting about week 25, a small 4-centimeter plantlet. Also, if first you think this little plantlet and this big 3-5 liter pot, that's no problem. You have to take the pots a little bit away, like on a like in a chess scheme, and that you have enough space. If you don't do it, you will have 5 to 20% of plants dying because they are too dense and the smaller plants are dying. We have really seen it. Now we are spacing the plants, so every second place is empty, and now we have 97-98% of good plants. So that's the solution, because they are starting very slowly, but then they are exploding in some days when they have really started. You have full, you have big leaves, stems, and they are really, they need place if you want the production. But you don't, you have the production only for half a year because you're potting in week 25, so only for half a year. And in spring, almost already from September in the first year on, you can sell the plant. There is another difference between the new type of plant and the old type of plant. In the old type of plant, you had these big rhizomes and you have reserves, and the plant can start for weeks and months with reserves in the roots. With the new plants, this micropropagated plant, first they are producing a root system and not a rhizome. And this root system is good for growing, but they need in spring, and also when you are planting them, they need some fertilizer, yeah, because they have not these reserves. And so you have to start the spring with fertilizing them, otherwise they are slow growing because they have not the normal reserves. So you have to change a little bit. You will have to have a somewhat higher fertilization level. But otherwise, this new plant, this new type of plant, makes the rhubarb culture in nurseries much, much easier.
That's true.
I have another, perhaps another and the last story to tell. People are always asking if rhubarb is a fruit or is a vegetable. Yeah, that's a classic story, but you should know. Of course, it's a vegetable, and in our assortment, it's in the group of Everwegs, of Ewiges Gemüse. This type of vegetables you can plant one time and then grow for years and pick also for years. So that's interesting. It's a vegetable, a stem vegetable, if you want to say it. But there was in the after World War II, there was a big trial before a judge in the U.S. and people wanted to know if it is a fruit or a vegetable, because I think the reason were taxes. And different level of taxes for vegetables and for fruit. And there were people who wanted them to have as a fruit. And the judge ruled rhubarb is a fruit. And that's the reason till now, as a fruit company and a fruit young plant company and a berry company, we are producing rhubarbs. And rhubarbs were also the bridge for us at Lubera to start with our vegetable business. Yes. So that's everything explicated.
Yeah, thank you, Markus. Thank you for your inside views in your rhubarb work. And thank you also for listening and watching our podcast. If you have any questions or comments, you can write directly to me an email to frederik.vollard@luberaedibles.com.
And if you want to follow us and to know everything we are doing in new things in breeding, please go on our website and is that my name?
You can on our website you can subscribe our newsletter or our, as we called it, our gardener's letter under luberaedibles.com/newsletter. Thank you.
Thanks for hearing Gardeners Radio by Lubera Edibles. You find us on every platform for podcasts, Spotify, Apple, and of course on our website www.luberaedibles.com. Go on gardening.